Tango Tango Papa 2020, August 21, 2018.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Altoona, Iowa. So, what has it been? It's been at least, maybe 20 days or so since the last podcast. So, there have probably been some opportunities where I could have podcasted. I could have made a podcast once or twice in the intervening time, although I have been pretty busy. I've been kind of bumping right up against my hours of service, you know, the DOT hours of service for the trucking industry. So I've kind of, you know, and that's been the case now for, I don't know, quite some time. They end up keeping me just about as busy as I can be most of the time, and in a lot of cases that ends up kind of making things topsy-turvy. So I may have to, as I have in the past couple of weeks, in order to make a trip work, in order to be able to make a delivery appointment, I had to sort of complete the hours that I had early in the day, and then park, and then try to sleep maybe until midnight or sometime a little bit after midnight, and then sort of borrow hours from the next day in order to make the, you know, make a trip, make a delivery appointment. And, you know, once you start doing that, then, you know, then they come up with another trip that sort of, you know, kind of requires the same thing. And it kind of, it ends up sort of creating a vicious pattern. The same thing, you know, like if I unload, you know, like really late in the evening or in the middle of the night, actually, then I end up having to sleep the next day. And then I'll end up with, you know, maybe several loads in a row that sort of repeat that pattern. So, but there are, you know, there are plenty of loads. You know, there's been several, you know, they send this video out on the Qualcomm. They send one out at least once a week, you know, sort of like a little pep talk from the president of the company, and the president of the trucking company, and, you know, they've mentioned a number of times that at least a couple of times they've mentioned that they've had twice as many loads as what we could haul. You know, so in other words, twice the capacity, you know, that we're being offered twice as many loads as we can actually haul and get it there. And you know, and you think, well, why don't they expand? Well, that's in the trucking business, it's easier said than done. Because you can say all day long that, you know, it's easy to, you know, they'll sell you as many trucks as you want. You know, the manufacturers will sell you as many trucks as you want. But that's, you know, you need people in order to populate those trucks, in order to make the pickups and the deliveries happen. And there's an ongoing shortage of truck drivers, and that is probably going to get worse. And I think it's to the point now, you know, and for a while they've been saying that, truck driving has no future, and, you know, we're going to have all these automated trucks, blah, 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 and, you know, millions of people are going to suddenly find themselves out of work because of, you know, this automation and artificial intelligence. And I think now that reality, I'm kind of seeing signs now that the reality is sort of hitting with the, you know, with the people that were sort of engaging in the artificial intelligence fantasy. The reality is kind of coming along and saying, no, they're sort of, the people are starting to realize, no, that's probably not going to happen. You know, I'm getting, I'm not seeing nearly as many articles kind of suggesting that automation is going to put everybody out of work. There's still some people talking about it. But at the end of the day, you're not, you know, just think of it logically. Name me a time when you could buy a machine, because this is basically what they're trying to say, that you could buy a machine. Let's say you're an evil rich guy and you're going to buy a machine that is, you know, that doesn't require any human input and or minimal human input, and it's just going to be productive and just make you money. And it doesn't work. You know, maybe you can use automation and, you know, some automation, you know, and automation is actually a good thing. You can use automation in order to increase productivity. And increasing productivity is always good. I know there are people that think it's bad, but it's actually a good thing to increase productivity if you're in business. So, but it's, you know, there's a kind of an ongoing shortage. 1 in 4 drivers that are, you know, currently driving, and this certainly includes me, 1 in 4 are near retirement age. Think about that. 1 in 4. And I probably talked about this before. You know, just imagine that you go to your local supermarket, wherever it is you shop, or your department store, or even Amazon, and just imagine 1 in 4 things aren't there. 1 in 4 things can't get to you. You know, and that's actually a pretty sobering thought, because then it, what happens then? The price goes up. So, you know. But in any case, I'm staying busy. I don't know what the answer is, but I'm staying busy, at least for now. So, in any case, I'm right now, as I mentioned, I'm in Iowa. I'm on my way with a load that goes to Wisconsin, and I'm supposed to be home by the 27th. So that's, what now, 6 days away or so, 6 or 7 days away, 6 days. Today's the 21st, I believe. So I'll start reminding them in earnest. Although the computer system should, you know, it should be reminding them as well, but I'll, you know, I always find it beneficial to remind them, start sending, you know, little reminders, but, you know, because there's usually, you know, like when you send the empty message on this Qualcomm, there's a place where you can type in a short little comment, and I'll just start typing in each time I complete a load, like when I complete a load tomorrow. The load that I have delivers tomorrow evening in Madison, Wisconsin. When I send the empty message, I'll probably send it before. I'll just kind of send them a reminder that, hey, I'm due home on the 27th. So, you know, it's always a good idea to remind them. That way they, or if someone sends a load, and it's more likely that the night people would do it, they would send a load, you know, just kind of dangling it out there to see if they could get somebody to take it. You know, and to be honest, you know, the computer systems that they have are all text-based screens. Just think of DOS screens. They're all text-based screens. And so those aren't, it's easy to overlook things. So it's best just to, you know, just keep sending reminders and don't sort of set them up to fail, you know, by, you know, well, I'll just wait and see what they do. You know, I hear people say stuff like that. And really what you're doing is just setting them up to fail, and then you can get angry afterwards, and that's why people set other people up to fail. You know, so they can, you know, kind of nurture their resentment. So, and of course, that's rampant in our society, isn't it? So, now, I do have some comments from Joel, and I'm going to take them out of order. The last comment that he sent, he's talking about Alex Jones, and Alex Jones kind of being, you know, banned from YouTube and dropped from Facebook and dropped from Twitter. You know, and there is a concerted effort to eliminate conservative, any kind of conservative viewpoints for, you know, from all three, basically, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. There is a coordinated effort to eliminate any kind of conservative talk or any conservative thought, or stop conservatives from getting together on the, you know, on those platforms. And I'm sure, you know, if you're Alex Jones, I'm sure it's disconcerting, and I'm sure, you know, it is disconcerting that they're doing these things. But at the same time, I think it's part of, you know, it's a coordinated effort, you know, kind of pushed by, you know, along by George Soros. There's a Media Matters document that was that's been found within the last day or two that sort of surfaced that pretty much says as much. It was a plan to eliminate conservative thought as much as possible before the 2018 elections, you know, the midterms that they keep talking about. But here's what I think. I think that it's going to backfire. You know, and you can't watch the news. You've got to just turn it off. I know it's it's really tempting to watch. People get bored. You know, it's easy for people to think, oh, I'm bored. I've got to listen to something. I've got to turn this on or listen to that. And I'm telling you, you don't. You know, it may be a little tough at first if you just shut it off. But if you push through it, what I've found, I've kind of gotten tired. For a long time now, for the last couple of years anyway, I've kind of turned, you know, I can't even listen to Rush Limbaugh. You know, I like Rush Limbaugh, but I just can't listen to it. And the reason being, it's, you know, even though I like him and I like the way he thinks and I agree with the way he thinks, the problem is that I don't really want to hear about all of the nutty things that people are doing. You know, it's you know, I've used the example before of the, you know, if you have an alcoholic or a drug addicted friend or relative, and they're just they keep saying, well, I'm going to change, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's all about whatever the new low is and the new drama that they've created for themselves. I don't want to know about it. I don't want to hear about it. I don't have anything to do with relatives that are like that. I don't have any friends that are like that. And if I have anybody that has tendencies that are like that, it kind of comes across that I really don't care about that kind of thing, and I really don't want to hear about it. You know, so that people that there's a tendency for people to, you know, their radar kind of goes, their little antennas go up, and they think, oh, I better not talk about that to him. You know, and then they sort of self-select themselves away. You know, from being my friend. You know, they're not getting a friend, you know, they're not going to hear, you know, they're not going to be able to cry in their beer with me. So, you know, but it's best just to shut all of that stuff off. Just turn it off. It's propaganda. You know, and a lot of people and it's easy to end up, you know, just reading the headlines. I'll read Drudge Report headlines and say, you know, and Alex Jones, by the way, that Joel's going to talk about. I'm going to take one of his, the last comment that he sent. I'm going to play it first before I play his other comments that he sent prior. And he's talking about Alex Jones. I do look at the headlines on InfoWars, and I look at some, and I read some of the articles. And, you know, you could say, if you go back, you know, whenever I first heard of Alex Jones, which has been a number of years ago, you know, it was easy to think, God, this guy's crazy, and he's talking about all of these, you know, New World Order stuff and this and that. But the thing is, even then, you know, he was backing up what he was saying. You know, now I didn't, you know, I thought, you know, he was a little over the, you know, pretty much over the top with the 9/11 conspiracy stuff, you know, because he was hot and heavy into that and, you know, at some point. So, but what has happened over time, he's gotten more and more legitimate. And, you know, he's really toned down a lot of the, you know, he's kind of walked away from the really crazy stuff that he used to say, and kind of, you know, the crazy conspiracy stuff, the 9/11 stuff in particular. He sort of backed away from that. He doesn't really bring that up anymore, and he's kind of changed over time, and he's, you know, he's really kind of moved into the mainstream. You know, himself, I'm not saying, you know, because you could say, well, he's moved into the mainstream and, you know, all these people believe all of these conspiracy theories. No, he's, you know, I think over time he's changed. And certainly what, you know, what's on their website is, you know, it's kind of turned into real news. And, you know, the stuff, the articles that are on InfoWars.com tend to be, you know, they're backed up. So, you know, and the news media just lies. And so, but even, you know, even Drudge, you know, there's been a headline or two where he picks up a story and then it turns out, well, that story was false. So you can't, you know, you're better off if you just shut it all off. Now, you know, I was saying, for the last couple of years, I listened to a lot of different podcasts, and a lot of them were, you know, kind of the tech-related podcasts. And I've just turned those off as well. You know, so I will listen to audiobooks, and then I've been listening to a lot of lecture-type stuff on YouTube, stuff that I can just, you know, you can play the audio of, you know, because I pay for the YouTube, or, you know, it used to be called YouTube Red, now it's called YouTube Premium, and I do pay for that, and, you know, because I'm a subscriber to the Google Music, so, and the YouTube Premium's included with it, so I, you know, I'm able to just, you know, kind of start something playing and turn the screen off, and, you know, I've got something to listen to. You know, and there's still a pretty broad variety of stuff on YouTube, even though YouTube is trying to purge stuff. By the way, there's a couple of Canadians, they're actually Canadians, that I've been kind of, that I find interesting. One of them is Stefan Molyneux. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Stefan Molyneux, S-T-E-P-A-N, Molyneux. And another one is Jordan Peterson. And both of those guys are extremely interesting. They've got some interesting ideas. And, of course, you know, the Stephen Molyneux or Stefan Molyneux, you know, they've threatened to ban him. You know, he's been one of the people that, you know, just within the past week or two, they have you know, they started hitting him with, you know, you're violating the terms of service or the community guidelines or whatever. And he's not. He's just, you know, it's just dry intellectual chit chat. You know, and yet, you know, I think they see him as, somebody sees him as really dangerous, as well as Jordan Peterson. You know, and this is just, you know, kind of dry intellectual professor type talk. But it's not leftist, per se. So, you know, but those are, you know, kind of a couple of things that I've, you know, I listen to. And then the other thing, you know, and it's, and I find it rather easy to do, is just sometimes just drive with nothing, you know, drive the whole day. I did that, this last week. I did that several days in a row. I just drove, and no music, no nothing, just driving. And, you know, it's an interesting thing to kind of be, you know, to be left with just, you just have your own thoughts. And that's actually a good thing if you can do that. It's a good thing to just, you know, I'm not saying you have to do it all the time, but it is a good thing, you know, give it a try. Just try if you, you know, you have, you're driving in particular. Just shut everything off. You know, and see how long you can go, and if you've, you know, you feel like you're bored or whatever, push through it. Because, you know, it doesn't take long then if you kind of push through the urge, oh, I got to listen to something. If you can push through that, then you come out on the other side, and it's kind of nice to be able to just drive and you know, with everything turned off. But actually, I do think it's a good thing that this happened. Because it, you know, increasingly the left has, and it's primarily the left, and, you know, and then you have, plus you have the Never Trump Republicans, the deep state type people. They hate Trump's guts, and it's just, it's eating them alive. Think of John McCain. It's just eating them alive, and so they've been kind of, you know, out of frustration, they sort of been eating each other, you know, with all this Me Too stuff. You know, there's been a lot of that, that, you know, kind of self-cannibalization, because they're so frustrated, kind of like black-on-black violence type thing. So it's lib-on-lib violence. But it's actually a good thing that this happened, because, you know, it not only are they exposing themselves, but they're also promoting Alex Jones. You know, you go back a month ago, 2 months ago, my 93-year-old mother, you ask her who, you know, if you said, who's Alex Jones, she'd say, who's, what are you talking about? Who's that? Guarantee you she knows who Alex Jones is now. Without any doubt, because, you know, she sits and watches that crap on, you know, MSNBC and CNN. She'll sit and watch that crap. And, of course, you know, she's programmed to hate Alex Jones. You know, she's never listened to Alex Jones. She probably wouldn't know if Alex Jones, you know, bumped into her. She wouldn't have any idea, but she just, she, I guarantee you, she knows the name and who he is. And, you know, so all they've done is kind of succeeded in promoting, you know, in, you know, kind of promoting who he is. You know, and he's world famous now. You know, and you go back, you know, the first person that ever mentioned Alex Jones to me was my friend Michael Swirling, that owns the radio station in Santa Cruz, California, KSCO. you know, a few years ago, he asked me, have you ever heard of Alex Jones? I went, well, that name, maybe, you know, and I thought I'd heard it. Maybe Adam Curry had mentioned it at some point. But then I started, you know, I was curious, and I started, you know, listen to Alex Jones for a bit, you know, because he had the stuff available online. And I listened to it, and I thought it was kind of interesting. It was, you know, like I say, it was a little far out with, you know, all the 9/11 conspiracy stuff. But, you know, I listened to it for a while until I kind of got bored with it. But I didn't know who he was. You know, here's Alex Jones. He's, you know, maybe on one radio station in Austin, Texas. Maybe, I don't even know. I don't even know that for sure. But boy, everybody in the world knows who Alex Jones is now. They've succeeded in catapulting him into world stardom. So, but I think, you know, they keep, you know, you can't just watch the news media and, you know, because they're telling the story kind of like before the election. They kept telling the story over and over that Hillary was going to win. It was a cinch. And they told it so often that they believed it themselves. And that's why they were so shocked whenever Trump won the election 2 years ago. We're almost coming, you know, it's been coming up on 2 years ago. And they were just shocked. They still can't believe it. They're still, you know, they're still throwing little hissy fits and they're in denial. So now they're telling themselves that, you know, they're telling the story now that there's going to be this big blue wave and the midterm elections, the Democrats are all going to get in, and then they have this fantasy that all these Democrats are going to get in, and Trump is going to, they'll impeach Trump and get rid of him and then reverse everything that he did, and, you know, so they have this ongoing fantasy. And I believe, I might be wrong, I believe it's exactly the opposite. I believe that even more people than ever are fed up with the news media. And, you know, they're fed up with what these people are trying to do, and they're not going to have any of it. And I think there will be no blue wave. You know, now there's probably going to be election fraud. You know, I have no doubt there's going to be some election fraud, but blue wave, don't think so. So, but it is necessary for these people to go through. They have to boil away. A lot of them, there's some of them that can, you know, that, it's like I've said, you know, people can end up in the gutter, either literally or physically. End up in the gutter, and then some of them, all of a sudden, they, you know, they'll start thinking rational thoughts, and then there's others that will simply die, and they would rather die in the gutter. And so there's a lot of people that, you know, the separation process has to take place. And so these people, you know, they become ever more angry. They're boiling with rage. They can't get Trump. They're trying to get the people around Trump, but they can't get Trump. And it's just, it's eating them alive. And like I say, they, you know, they start to eat each other. And at some point, some of them will do a flip-flop. So, you know, kind of, you know, sort of a codependency type thing. So, anyway, I could keep going. Let's listen to Joel's comment.
No, I'm going to make you do another podcast. And I just listened to your one yesterday. Anyway, just thinking about things, about specifically that happened yesterday with Alex Jones. And while I'm not a fan of his, I'll say that, I do think that especially people who don't ever, probably never ever have seen anything but some of the crazier things that Alex has done. It's like this. It's like, even crazy deserves a place. That's kind of what I want to say. To me, it's really, really interesting when you have YouTube, iTunes, and Facebook all ban Alex Jones at the same time. At the same time.
Well, let me interrupt. So, part of the reason that they, you know, they're starting to pick on Alex Jones and they want to ban conservatives in general from the internet, from their platforms, because after all, they're private businesses. They love to throw that around. You know, even though a private business, you can't be in business if you don't want to bake gay cakes or you don't want to bake transgender cakes. Boy, you have to accommodate the public, but boy, when it comes to, you know, your conservative posting on Google or Facebook or YouTube or, you know, whatever, can't have that. We're private businesses. We can ban whoever we want to. Well, that's what's good for the goose is good for the gander. But they think, in their minds, they're still in the blame mode. You know, how did this happen? How did Hillary lose? How did we end up with Donald Trump, you know, who they hate for various reasons? They hate his guts. You have no idea how much they hate him. Burning hatred. And so they think that, you know, this is how their mind works in part. They think that, well, Alex Jones helped elect Trump. You know, of course, Alex Jones is, oh, I helped elect Trump. You know, of course he says that. Whether he did or not, he did appear. I think Trump did appear with, you know, on Alex Jones's show. I'm sure he has. And certainly some of Trump's friends have. So maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But in their minds, they think that he, you know, somehow it's Alex Jones's fault. Alex Jones promoted Trump, and so therefore that got Trump elected. That's how it happened, is what their thinking is. They really think that we're just all a bunch of mind-numbed robots, to quote Rush Limbaugh. That's what they think we are. We're just a bunch of automatons, and we just do, you know, we get our marching orders. Alex Jones gives us our marching orders. And that's really what they think. And it's exactly the opposite. You know, George Soros gives them their marching orders. You know, and they all march. You know, they just all kind of do everything at once. You know, you talk about coordinated, you know, and collusion. There it is. You know, like you're saying, the Facebook and YouTube and all that, you know, they didn't ban that. That was all coordinated. That didn't just happen organically. That was a coordinated effort. You know, and they think, well, if we can get rid of Alex Jones and we can get rid of, you know, we'll start after, you know, then it's a bottomless pit if they get away with it. But they don't get, what you have to understand is they're not getting away with it. They've just exposed themselves even more. You know, now they, you know, basically they want to ban free speech. You know, the Democrats circulated a bill in Congress, you know, basically wanting to regulate the internet like the Chinese do. You know, and of course the news media didn't report that. I found that on Drudge. You know, so there's a lot of stuff that, you know, you think you're informed. You get this illusion that you're informed if you kind of watch that crap or listen to that crap all day long, read it, and you think you're really informed, and you're not. You know, you've been, particularly if you're watching MSNBC and CNN, you know, they keep repeating the same selected news stories over and over again, and as if that's everything that happened, and, you know, kind of like Walter Cronkite, and that's the way it is, you know, on such and such day. That's not it, but yet you get this illusion that that's what it is. So they think that if they could just go back to the days of Walter Cronkite, where everything's, the information's just sort of tightly controlled by the news media, then we're all going to just, you know, kind of miraculously, you know, all think the same way, you know, have a shared, one of the things they love to say is a shared reality. We want to, you know, I've heard him say that. We want a shared reality. Well, sorry, I don't want to share your leftist, idiotic reality. You know, there was a couple that, you know, of course, you know they're leftists. There's this couple that quit their jobs, and they were, you know, they were making, videos on YouTube, and they were doing this world, I'm sure they were asking for donations as well. They were just, you know, going around the world into all these different troubled countries, and just to show that, evil is a make-believe concept. You know what happened to them, don't you? They were killed. I forget which country they were in, but they were killed. You know, so, you know, who wants to share their, you know, you want to share that reality? You know, because they're living in a fantasy. They want you to share their fantasy, in other words. They would love nothing more. And that's where this, the left in particular has a compulsion, and it really is a compulsion. They have a compulsion towards totalitarianism. You know, you can't have any other ideas. You have to think the way they do. And of course, that comes from evil itself. You know, and what better way? You know, you get people to deny that evil even exists. You know, even as they're sort of, you know, they embrace it. Their identities come from evil, and yet they don't believe that it. They don't want to even believe that it exists. They think, oh, that's just a man-made concept. You know, you have. Let's say you have a. You know, pick your group. You know, I'll pick on the abortionists. They would love nothing more than to, you know, force everyone to believe that abortion is okay. It's really good to kill your baby. It's really a good thing to kill your baby, and it's really a noble thing to do, and, you know, we're going to sell the body parts to the federal government so they can have fresh body parts to make humanized mice with. That's another story that I saw. You know, so, and it's a bottomless pit, you know, there is no end to it. But they're driven by a, you know, the last thing they want is conscience. The last thing they want to face is their own conscience. The last thing they want to know is that they're wrong. And so, you know, that's where the totalitarian impulse comes from, is then we'll force everybody to believe the same way. Force everyone to believe the fantasy, and then, you know, our fantasy in particular, don't allow any other competing ideas. Everybody has to believe in socialism. Everybody has to believe that, you know, exactly the way we do, or we'll kill you, or we'll shut you up, etc. And we'll have utopia, and they won't feel guilty anymore. But of course, that's the lie, because the more you sin, you know, just remember this, the more you sin, you know, kind of pick that up, you know, or just take that as, you know, as a, just in general, the more you violate your conscience, the more you violate the relationship that you have with your Creator, the very source of consciousness, the more you know, and of course we have free will, we can turn our backs on that. We've been given that choice. The more you do that, doesn't matter how many people you have around, you surround yourself, that it's really, you know, that wrong really is right and right is really is wrong. The you know, it doesn't matter how many people you have. The more you do that, the guiltier you become. And the guiltier you become, the more agony you're in. And that's what they, that's what drives these people to, the, you know, force everyone to think the way they do. Force everyone to be just as miserable as they are. That's what, you know, so you can't continue to sin and, you know, and I'm, you know, basically, you know, there's seven deadly sins, but it really goes back to not being friends with your conscience, seeing your conscience, the thing that animates us, the thing that actually makes us aware as human beings, being enemies with that, you can't do that. The more you try to separate yourself from that, the bigger the wedge that you try to drive, the more agony you're going to find yourself in. And that's just, you know, so that's, and it's a bottomless pit that they're trying to drag everyone down into the bottomless pit with them. So anyway, let's go on with Joel's comment.
So for me, I look at that as basically when freedom dies. You know, a lot of the left will say, well, the Constitution only says that about the government. I'm like, no. You misunderstand the point. You misunderstand the whole point of that amendment. First Amendment doesn't give you free speech. It preserves it by saying that the government can't jail you for making free speech, you know, for making statements that it disagrees with. Well, when Facebook and YouTube, Twitter probably is coming next, ban someone, or be it conservative, crazy, left, whatever, I don't care, then these companies cannot say, therefore, free speech. Free speech and free ideas is essential to a civilized society. Because someone believes something different than you do, doesn't mean they don't have a right to say it. You have just as much of a right to ignore it. That's my feeling. I am rabid free speech. I may not believe what someone says, but I will stand up and defend them for their right to say it. Unless you can defend speech that, you know, that you abhor, you're not for free speech. You just aren't. It's that simple. And I saw the one thing that you shared there on Facebook, talking about Facebook and Democrats and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I didn't read it. But this goes towards what I think will probably end up happening, which will be the end of Facebook, YouTube, and some of these other sites, is that someone will come out with sites that say what the heck you want on our platform. We don't care. We will never, unless you are literally committing illegal acts, you know, like unless you're sharing child porn on our platform, then you can say what you want. You know, unless you're doing something like that, you can say what you want. Now, I think that's what's going to happen. And I bet you within a year, Facebook would be really hurting if something like that happened. The same thing with YouTube. And the problem is these companies are very large. YouTube is part of Alphabet, which is, you know, what became of Google as a whole. And they make tons of money. Facebook makes a lot of money. They're very large. Apple, well, I don't need to tell you about Apple. Apple might be the first trillion-dollar company. So, I mean, when these corporations, and what's funny is how much the left supports these organizations. I thought they were anti-capitalism. I thought they were for socialism. If that's the case, then they wouldn't. I mean, why would you want a company as large as Apple? It doesn't make sense. Now, granted, we already know the left doesn't make sense in a lot of cases. But, you know, when I see people on the left celebrating when Alex got kicked off these platforms and not saying a thing when Sarah Jiang said some pretty bad things about white people, and Candace Owens gets kicked off Twitter for 12 hours because of, oh, by the way, they apologized to her already, but when she took Sarah's comments and reversed it, replaced white with black, just to show people how stupid those comments that Sarah made were. I mean, I have hope. I have hope. You know, my hope isn't in necessarily in people. It's in Jesus Christ, of course. But when I look back at some of the things that have been happening as of late, and some of the things I've experienced in the last few weeks, I have hope. A few weeks ago, I was in San Diego area, Chula Vista to be specific, and I went to lunch. I walked across the street to there was a Taco Bell across the street from where I was working. So I walked over there, and I got in line, and behind me, a man and a woman in California, no less. Okay. They got behind me, you know, they basically got into the door at the same time. And it was one of those things where, you know, hell, you go, well, you go. Those kind of situations, you know. The woman said, you can go ahead and go. I think there's too many feminists anyway. That's exactly what she said. And I was just floored. I was like, am I in California? Because California is very, very liberal. So, that was an interesting experience. So, well, I don't want to leave you another 15-minute comment. So here you go.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joel. I think that I think the left, you know, they're kind of exposing themselves for who they are. And, you know, in some countries, you know, they can kind of get away with it. Look at what's happening in South Africa. You know, how many people are aware of that? You know, what's going on in South Africa right now? They're kicking the white farmers off of the land. You know, and just like they did in Rhodesia. Or, you know, it used to be Rhodesia, and then they changed the name of it to Zimbabwe. And famine came. The economy collapsed, and it's never recovered in Zimbabwe. Same thing's going to end up happening in South Africa. You're going to have millions of refugees probably flooding Europe and elsewhere. And it's going to end in economic ruin for South Africa and famine. And then you're going to, look at us. We need money. You know, you're going to see the TV pictures of the little kids with the bloated bellies and the flies landing on their lips. You know, it's utterly insane. You know, and of course our news media, you know, they're not going to report that much. I don't know if, you know, if you watch CBS and NBC and ABC and PBS, they're probably not reporting that story, would be my guess. Or they just have, you know, limited mentions of it. Of course, they're sympathetic, you know. They're sympathetic with the communists that have taken over South Africa. ANC, African National Congress. Look at what's happened in Venezuela. you know, it's socialist utopia. What, you know, and so, the, you know, they've got the worst inflation, some of the worst inflation ever now. Just incredible inflation. And people are fleeing by the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, to the point where some of the other South American countries are, you know, basically probably not going to let them, not going to let them cross the border. You know, it's utterly ridiculous. And how many, you know, does our news media report what's going on in Venezuela? Are you, you know, not if you're watching CNN or MSNBC, or you're reading the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Los Angeles Times. They're not going to report leftist failures. Really ridiculous. So, you know, leftists, you know, anyone that's possessed, you know, and I can make this statement, anyone that is possessed of evil, and to one degree or another, we all are. You know, we're, there's a concept of us being born in sin, and I really believe that that's true. I know there are people who want to argue with that. But I think that concept is very valid, and if you really understand what it means, then you know, we as human beings are given a choice. You know, we come into this world and we have this consciousness, and it's a fascinating thing. How is it, you know, of course, Ray Kurzweils of the world want to think that it's just magically sort of like a cargo cult, you know, kind of waiting for cargo to come out of the sky after World War II, you know, and as the tropical islands. He wants to magically believe that consciousness simply arises if you just get the right amount of computing power and the right algorithms and pattern recognition going on, that somehow consciousness just magically arises from that. And it doesn't. I believe that you know, there may well be, you know, and there's plenty of YouTube videos about this, about the you know, the human brain is probably a quantum computer, and not only is it a quantum computer, but a massive, every human brain is a massive quantum computer. You know, they keep talking about quantum computing, and they've gotten it to work in, you know, kind of really limited cases, and they keep talking about scaling it up, but if it's really true that there's, you know, kind of quantum activity going on and, you know, kind of on a mass basis in the human brain, you know, you're talking about lots, every human brain has lots of quantum computers. And, you know, to the, you know, and of course the people that want to believe that they can create artificial intelligence consciousness don't want to hear that. They don't want to believe that. They want to think that, you know, it's within our capacity to create consciousness, you know, in a computer. When I don't think it is. I think it's there's some kind of quantum activity. I think somehow consciousness is involved with that, and perhaps arises from that somehow. That's a possibility. I don't know. But I do believe it's a possibility. But nonetheless, we as human beings are different from animals, plants, animals, insects. I'm watching a fly kind of walk around upside down, flying around. You know, and they've got a little tiny brain, and yet they, you know, they're very much aware. If you, you know, they're, you know, you make any kind of motion. And boy, they've got great motion detection.
How's that?
You know? So how does that happen? But they're aware. You know, I don't believe a fly thinks. It's not aware of its own existence. Your dog really isn't aware of its own existence. You know, a monkey really isn't aware of its own existence. You know, we've got the, you know, computing stuff that goes on and kind of in the background that we don't have to think about. You know, their brain sort of automates a lot of things. We don't have to think about it. You don't have to, you know, do the calculations when you, you know, kind of judge distances in your immediate surroundings. You, as you, you know, kind of walk and interact with the world, how, you know, the brain, that's incredible. It takes an incredible amount of computing power just to, you know, just to be able to walk around and keep your balance, let alone do, you know, much else. And yet, somehow, we as human beings, we have this awareness. But it's that awareness is really kind of part and parcel tied into something that tells us, you know, it's kind of telling us the difference between right and wrong. Of course, we love to distract ourselves. We love to, you know, kind of come up with all kinds of, you know, oh, I'm bored, or, you know, I have a short attention span, I hear people say, or I like to multitask is another thing that people, you know, say. They jump from one thing to the next to the next. Of course, you go into any kind of store, and they always have some kind of music blaring, often, you know, more than one thing. You hear competing music. You go in public places and you'll often hear, you know, it's not just one music thing they have playing, they may have several. You know, it's just a jumble. Distraction. But if you really think about it, you know, whatever it is that makes us aware, that gives us the self-awareness, intrinsic within that is something is talking to us, you know, about right and wrong, you know, not in words. But we sort of know. But we want to be the ego. You know, that we want to know ourselves as God. We want to think, we want to believe that we are the, you know, we're the king of our own domain. And of course, we're not. We are the experiment. We are in the experiment. We are not in charge of our own experiment. We are in the experiment. And that's what you're talking about, hope. That's really, at a fundamental level, that's what gives me hope. Because I know we are in the experiment. And the experiment is not meaningless. Now it is if you're one of the people that's separated from your conscience, if you're one of the people that can't make friends with your conscience, if you're one of the people that, you know, that seeks to drive a wedge between yourself and your conscience, then yeah, it's meaningless. You know, the bigger the wedge, the more meaningless it becomes, the more agony you are in. And it it doesn't, as I said before, it doesn't matter how many friends you try to surround yourself with, you know, people saying the same things, doesn't matter. You know, by the way, where we started going off, really kind of going off the rails, and it's been a number of years ago when they came up with this hate speech, the hate crimes. You know, the hate crimes legislation came first. You know, and that's really absurd, you know, because, you know, well, you're going to get extra time because you hated this guy whenever you killed him. What? You know, you either, you know, somebody either commits murder or they don't. But when you try to determine, well, they had hate, you know, therefore it was worse. And they get extra time for hating or something. And it's a crazy, it's insane, it's an insane concept, but it's, that was the foot in the door. That was the camel's nose under the tent. And then once they establish that, oh, well, it's a hate crime. Then you can say, oh, it's hate speech. You're hurting my feelings, therefore it's hate. You hate me. You're hurting my feelings. You're engaging in hate speech. We're going to ban hate speech. Anything that I don't want to hear is hate speech, as long as I'm a leftist. As long as I'm possessed of evil, basically. And that seems to be where the evil is, although it could be on the right. There's been times in the past when the evil is on the right, primarily. At the end of the day, you know, Satan, you know, doesn't really care whether you're a liberal or a conservative. As long as you have hatred in your heart, he has you. As long as you have resentment, and of course, resentment is the thing that we use as conscious beings. Resentment is the utility that we use, the facility that we use, the commodity that we use in order to drive a wedge between ourselves and our conscience. We try to separate ourselves from our Creator in order to be our own God. In other words, you know, we should be, you know, ideally, the ideal state as a human being, as a conscious being, the ideal state, we should be entwined with our Creator. That, you know, it should be intrinsic, and then we just kind of know automatically, we know the difference between right and wrong. And we do it. We see what's right and we do it. But we as human beings want to be God. The temptation is there. It's too great. We want to be God. And so we end up kind of trying to split off. From that, you know, that fundamental base. And then we end up seeing it as a guilty conscience. So, anyway, let me check and see how long we've been going here. Okay, well, it's a little over an hour. That's not so bad. Go ahead and play the rest or the other part of Joel's comment. It's about a little over 15 minutes worth.
Hey, Tom. Joel McLaughlin here. My trip to Texas and a trip to San Diego area has been completed. Texas, actually, it's kind of more than just a trip to Texas, but we drove 16 hours, I think it was, from Columbus down to Dallas-Fort Worth area, and
had overnights in Memphis, Tennessee area on the way down, and an overnight in Little Rock on the way back up. Of all the things I have to say about driving that distance, I did all of it. I was glad I took the breaks. We drove no more than, other than on the way home, I drove no more than 8 hours in a stint. Probably my biggest frustration are two things. Number one, people don't really know how to merge nowadays. I don't know what it is, but every time, and it happened like two or three times on the way down, two or three times on the way back, less on the way back. So, you know, probably three times on the way down, two times on the way back. In both cases, it was less on the way down, less on the way back up, and less or more on the way back down. But wherever the road switched from two to one lane, what would happen is it would come down to like almost a dead standstill up until you got through the merge. Once you were through the merge, smooth sailing for the most part. It was really crazy. I've never seen anything like this before. You know, it's just so problematic. That's one. But the other problem, what I like to call rubberneck disease. A crash or something just happens. Or like on the way down, I actually had looks like somebody had threw a cigarette butt out into a grassy area in Texas. And, of course, with it being so dry down there, that grass just went up in flames. So I actually saw probably the tail end of it. It wasn't that bad. There was squads already there. But people were just staring at it like they ain't never seen it before. I'm like, you can look and move at the same time. I mean, should you slow down? Yes. Should you come to a standstill? No. That's probably my biggest frustration. That and just how horrible traffic was in Dallas. Dallas traffic was just horrendous. So, my son did okay in the tournament. I got to stay at quite a few hotels. I stayed at the one we were in down there was a Hampton. And then we stayed in a Microtel on the way down, and a Holiday Inn Express on the way back up. So that's my experience going down to Texas. Then I flew out to work. In fact, I probably will make this trip at least once more before the end of the year. From Columbus to Chula Vista, which is San Diego area. It would be my first time ever that far west. I've never been to California prior to that. So, but I have been to Arkansas, and I have been to Tennessee and to Kentucky, and Texas before. So, I know that a lot of conservatives will call California commie-fornia, and to an extent, they're not wrong. just in some of the weird laws that they have there, like this straw issue, which is like the dumbest thing I've ever heard of, you know, when they have people crapping in the streets in San Francisco. But straws, you know. So anyway, and not to mention the fact the whole straw issue was actually based on a made-up figure that is just way out of the ordinary. Is using plastic bad? Yes, but is it as bad as that figure painted it? No. So anyway, another thing I expected to see more of was warning signs, you know, like they passed Prop 65, which is the potential carcinogens, which I only saw that in one restaurant. I went into a Starbucks to get coffee and was posted on a bulletin board. The rest of the time, I never seen it. And I ate places from Taco Bell all the way up to a place called Tom Ham's Lighthouse, which a little pricey, but you know, that was probably my good meal for the trip. I always end up having one good meal. Well, I had a lot of meals, but so we went to there. I went to there with a colleague, and that was fine. It was good stuff. And then I went to a place called Lazy Dog over in Mission Valley, and that was just utter chaos. Mission Valley, there's so much traffic. It's almost I don't know if it's as bad as Dallas was, traffic in that specific area of San Diego, but it was pretty bad. I mean, it's rare where I'll go into a shopping plaza or like a retail area and not be able to find a spot close to the restaurant or wherever I'm going. I had to park, I would say, halfway across the plaza to where the restaurant was, where I was meeting my friend. You know, so that was a little crazy. But other than that, driving around San Diego was actually pretty easy. They had quite a bit of lanes, six lanes going in each direction on almost every freeway it was on, and then almost every freeway also would have at least two exit lanes, which is, that's something you've never see in Ohio. And the weather was beautiful. It was about the same as really as what it was in Ohio. Wasn't too hot, wasn't too cold. And I was able to fly the, if you look on Facebook there, I was actually able to fly the drone out on Silver Strand Beach, which one thing I didn't know when I was going to the beach was that it would cost me $10 to park. But that's all right. You know, that wasn't too bad. And that was probably the one sightseeing kind of thing I did on this trip. Now, I think next time I head back out, I'll probably do the same equipment, same gear I had with me the first time. I'll probably do the same thing again. But I think this time I want to head out east of California towards where more of the Sierras are and fly my drone near there. I heard there's a I'm not exactly sure where it is. I'll have to double check with a coworker of mine at the client I was working with while I was there. He said there's a place to the east of Chula Vista where basically there's a they call it the drone airport practically, because there's so many drone flyers out there, and it's near a mesa, which I think sounds pretty cool to fly nearby. So just something different. At least with that, I may investigate. I don't know if I can get it fast enough, but I might try and get a passport just so I can maybe go to dinner down in a Tijuana if I wanted to one night, just because I've never been out of the country, so I need to get a passport in order to do that, or just to make sure I bring along the proper documentation with me so that I can get back in and out of the country. But it might be worth just checking it out. I know Tijuana's really nothing to write home about, but it'd be interesting. Like I said, I've never been out of the country, so being so close to the border down there. And I kind of like to see the border. I just want to see it. A friend of mine says, who lives in that area, he says they're actually starting to build the wall down there, the border wall they've been talking about for years, or at least since Trump's been in office. But I had a good time, really, in all those places. California really wasn't nearly as bad. If I had to say anything about California, probably the thing that disturbed me more, or that just confused me more than in other states, was they have kind of a weirder fill up on the pump. And I don't know if it's also with all the cars that you buy. Well, I assume they all have what they call California emissions, but filling up the gas was not as easy as it is in pretty much every other state in the union. because of the weird nozzle they have. I'm not exactly sure how that would work on my vehicle, because my vehicle had a different kind of a plug hole for gas, which I thought was odd. Now, the rental car I drove down there was the Equinox, Chevy Equinox. It was 2018. It was supposed to have Android Auto or the Apple CarPlay thing, and I tried it in both phones, because I have my work phone's an iPhone, and I have an Android phone for my personal phone, and I can't get it to work. So I'm wondering if National disabled it on purpose so that they'd make you pay for the expensive GPS. I don't know. But I was still able to use Google Maps, though, for getting around, and it was pretty easy to do that. So I just wish it was showing on the display. It would sound odd that they do that, because we rent with National all the time. And not this year, but last year, last winter it was, I had a client in Western New England, and I had a Chevy Cruze. I think it was 17 or an 18. I can't remember, but it was a relatively new Chevy Cruze, and it worked. Android Auto worked great there, but I couldn't get either of them to work. So, you know, I think that what they call a projection system that works for both Android Auto and iPhone is kind of not done yet, in my opinion. Most people probably wouldn't even know that it was there. So, but I can say this, Android Auto and Google Maps is way better than the NAV system that's in my Traverse, which is a 17 Traverse 2017. So, but anyway, it was interesting. In 2 weeks, I was in, counting Ohio, was in at least probably 8 different states. And on the way back from California, I had to take a red eye. Oh my gosh, I don't know if I ever want to do that again. I may not. it just depends on flight times. But I really did. I didn't want to have a Friday be a complete waste of a day. I didn't take off from San Diego till 10 o'clock, after 10 o'clock. It was like 10:30 at night there. And by the time it was about 6 in the morning when I landed, I was flying through Dulles on the way back. So, and I forgot to mention my experience on TSA on that trip. Seems like every single time I go through John Glenn, now it's John Glenn International Airport, which is Clovis's airport, I end up getting either additional scans on my bag, or I get the pat down because they saw something questionable on the body scanner. I don't know what that is. So, but my favorite is when they tell you to take out anything bigger than a cell phone. I'm like, do you want me to empty my whole backpack? Because I had my drone, I had my Osmo Mobile 2. trying to think what it was. Oh, I had my SLR with me too. So I mean, I had all this stuff crammed into the backpack and into my SLR bag. So usually what I ended up doing is I just put it in there, and I figure it's probably going to draw their ire. I figure they can just pull it off the side and do that, and it's a lot easier than me dumping half the bag onto the deck. So that's usually what I do. I also did not take my BiPAP out of the case. Much of the time lately, it seems like that's what they've been having me do. Ran out of time there. much of what they've been having me do is leaving the BiPAP in the case, and they've been scanning it. And that's really my preferred thing, because I really don't want to take something that I use to breathe at night and sit it in a bin where shoes have been. So
But then they did make me take my iPad out, and I believe that happened in both. I don't remember if I did that in San Diego or not, but I think it did. It did happen. But San Diego, they didn't even scan me extra. I went through the scanner, and I just flew right through security in San Diego, and it was pretty easy to get through. Let me tell you, the red eye killed me. It about killed me. I got home Friday, I took a nap, then I woke up, did a couple things, and then I was done for the day. And then we went and did our normal life things, you know. But such is the life of a traveling consultant. So hope all is going well for you, Tom, and we'll talk to you later.
Okay, well, thank you again, Joel. California, Southern California is kind of its own little world. And, you know, I think, you know, I see the appeal of, you know, why people would want to live there, particularly because of the weather. You know, that's like the land of endless summer, pretty much. And so it's, and then you were talking about, you know, even in the summer, if you're in San Diego or Los Angeles and you're fairly close to the ocean, then it's, you know, it's normal for them to have temperatures, you know, in the 70s. Even if you go inland and it's over 100 degrees, if you get out very close to the water or to the ocean, like you're in, you know, in San Diego, or you're in, you know, somewhere around downtown Los Angeles, the temperature's probably going to be in the 70s. It's very pleasant. So, you know, so you have a kind of a cooling effect from the water. So, you know, and I don't know. I think everybody should visit Southern California at one point or another, especially. Now, you were just in San Diego, so you just got a little taste of it. You go up to Los Angeles, and you know, you're talking about the freeways and what have you. There's just it's amazing. It's always amazed me, you know, how many freeways there are. You know, not only in Los Angeles, but then you start going east out of Los Angeles, and that probably stretches for 100 miles. Where you've just got, you know, one community, next community, next community, and they're just back to back to back. And, you know, it's, and I don't know, the population of, if, you know, of probably, I don't know, maybe Los Angeles or greater Los Angeles itself is like 18 million people if you really count all of those wet eastern suburbs. You know, so it's it's a really interesting place, but you know, the politics have gone obviously very liberal, and it's, you know, kind of kooky, and it didn't just happen overnight. You know, that's been going on for years, but it started out as a very conservative place. A lot of people don't realize that, but it started out as a very conservative place. But what ended up happening is the typical story. You have people, prosperous people, and you know, there's obviously lots of prosperity that's happened over the years in California, especially Southern California. You've had lots of prosperity that's happened out there. And what do prosperous people do? Why, they spoil their kids. The evidence of it's the 1960s. You know, you had all the hippies and the, you know, and all that. You know, the people going, or the kids going around smoking dope and long hair, and you know, the so-called hippie movement, and you know, peace and love, and so on and so forth. And that was a direct result. I really believe it happened after World War II. The guys, you know, greatest generation, won World War II. They came back and they the economy boomed, and they, what did they do? They spoiled their kids. They failed to, in large part, they failed to raise their kids properly. They failed to transmit their own value system to their children. And it's been, you know, of course the school system has colluded with that to kind of make it worse, make the problem worse, make the children as unlike their parents as possible. And so we've had, you know, three generations or so of, you know, each successive generation raising new kids, and it just becomes worse and worse and worse. So you have spoiled people, and it's a, people make jokes about spoiling their kids or spoiling their grandkids or whatever, and they just make little funny jokes about it, and they think it's cute. But it's a deadly serious business. So when you spoil your kid, you're causing them, you're sort of inflicting, whether you realize it or not, and most people probably don't want to realize it, you spoil your kid and you're inflicting a disability on them, and a disability that they probably, you know, a lot of people will never be able to recover from. You spoil your kid, you know, spoiled kids become angry. And how do I know that? I was a spoiled kid. You know, I was, when I was a kid, I was the first kid that my parents had. And it was 5.5 years, I was the only child before they had the next one. So for that first 5.5 years, I would cry. I'm told I would cry if they take me to the, back in those days you had what they called dime stores instead of, you know, Walmart, you had a dime store, you know, like Woolworths or Duckwalls was another one. And I would cry, I'm told, that because I had, I couldn't find any toys that I didn't already have. And so I was angry. You know, I ended up kind of being angry, and you know, as a young adult, I was proud of being angry. I was actually proud that I had a temper. Now somehow, I've been able, you know, I've been blessed to be able to recover from that. But a lot of people can't. I know a guy that's in his 50s. I know a lot of guys in their 50s. But I know this one guy in particular in his 50s, and he was an only kid. And I'm pretty sure, I never did see the parents, but him with his parents, but I'm pretty sure that the parents spoiled him. Kind of typical story. And so now in his 50s, you know, he's gone through a series of things. But now in his 50s, he's kind of dysfunctional. You know, and he is working, finally. You know, and he's had a series of problems, but and hopefully he'll be able to, you know, at some point he can kind of overcome it. I think, you know, it's kind of looking like he might be able to overcome it. But I can see that he's kind of, you know, he's got this tendency to be angry at, you know, something that doesn't go his way or the way he thinks it should go. He gets angry about it, you know, and it doesn't, of course it doesn't do you any good to get angry. You get resentful towards people, places, and things. Does it do you any good? Of course it doesn't. It's exactly the opposite. It causes self-sabotage. A You wonder why you're miserable. You're miserable because you have resentment. Plain and simple. If you're depressed, if you ever become, you know, people say, well, I get depressed now and then or whatever, and it's just normal. No, it's not normal. That's not normal, and just because it's, you know, the psychologist, you know, the psychiatrist take a survey, oh, well, everybody gets depressed. All these people say they become depressed, therefore it's normal. No, it's not. If you become depressed, if you have anxiety over things, you have resentment. Whether you're aware of it or not, you have resentment. Resentment isn't something you want to hold on to. You know, so, but there's lots of people have it. But that doesn't make it right. And it really does cause you to self-sabotage. You know, so spoiling your kids, you know, that's really a bad thing. It's terrible. You know, the best thing that a parent, and I think I said this in the last podcast, maybe the best thing a parent can do is probably, it's, you know, when a kid gets 18 or whatever, kick him out of the nest. And even better than that, destroy the nest afterwards. Make them, you know, in the meantime, you can, you know, you should be teaching them how to kind of make their own way and the value of work. Because if you don't do that, they've been robbed, and they know they've been robbed, and they hate your guts for it. Because they know they've been robbed of something. Probably can't even articulate it. You know, and I don't know. If you're one, maybe you're, you know, I don't know who listens to this podcast. I have no idea. Maybe you're one of those people that's, maybe you might be one of those 30-year-olds that's still at home living in your parents' basement. The best thing you can do is to get out, get a job, take responsibility for your own existence. If you want to get rid of, you know, start to get rid of the anxiety, start taking responsibility for your own existence. Do something productive. Do something that helps your fellow human beings. And that revolves around, and I'm talking about things that revolve around, you know, being, you know, producing something, doing something useful that you get paid for. And that's really the, you know, that's really the best thing that you can do. And then, you know, get out of the, you know, move out of your parents' house. You know, there are millions of those people, literally millions of those people that have these useless degrees. You know, they went to college. They bought the lie that, you had to have a college degree. Well, you know, maybe it's a good thing to have a college degree. You know, it can be. I think it can be. But a lot of them are miseducated. They're not being taught anything useful to do that's actually useful in the real world. They're just, I heard the phrase Marxist paper mill. And I think that a lot of colleges are simply Marxist paper mills. You know, you'd be better off, literally, better off, you know, getting out and, you know, hauling garbage or digging ditches. Doing something productive. Take responsibility for your own existence. Try that. Give it a try. So, anyway, probably better be cutting this off before it goes on too long. Hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.